This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
I'm Mark Packer. My partner would be Wes Durham, hence Packer and Durham. Wesley, how are we doing today?
We are well, Pack. We'd like to welcome everyone to the first T-Shirt Friday of 2021.
Oh, I forgot.
We're gonna have only a few of these, Pack. Only a few, because you know, we'll get into July and then we'll have to go back to normal, you know, attire on a Friday. But T-Shirt Friday, if you missed us last summer, was kind of a thing for a few weeks. And so we'll have it. It's only on Fridays, though. Thus the name, T-Shirt Friday. Doing well. We are in interesting times, Mr. Packer, and we're going to cover some of that today on this show. Name, image, and likeness coming up with Michael McCann. A legal expert, writes for SI.com, among others. We will talk to him bottom of the hour. And yes, we are going to dive head first at 8 o'clock into yesterday's proposal of the college football playoff expansion. Maybe against our better judgment, but we're going to dive into it at 8 o'clock. Nicole Auerbach will be here at 9:30 as well. And 8:30, Gary Gate, who has been with us before, is the women's lacrosse coach at Syracuse and now is the new men's coach. Arguably one of the greatest players in Syracuse history, is now their head coach. So interesting how the coaching carousel in the ACC has featured a lot of prominent players who have now become head coaches. Two in basketball with Hubert Davis and John Shire, and now Gary Gate becoming the head lacrosse coach at Syracuse. We'll talk to him at 8:30. So busy Friday on hand, sir. Busy Friday.
We have lost some great, great coaches as far as retirement goes. Roy Williams, mm-hmm. Larry Penley, John Desko. Of course, we know about Coach K, but we'll get him for one more year to enjoy that. But we'll get into all that stuff. But we're also going to talk softball, and we're going to lead off with that. And I know football is going to be front and center. We'll get into that momentarily. But yesterday, Florida State had the opportunity to win a national championship, and they came up short. But I'll tell you what, great pitching does it every time. I don't care who you are. I don't care what the sport, brother. If somebody's shutting you down on the hill, in the circle, that's a problem. And that was a problem yesterday, Wes.
Yep.
Two hits. It's hard to beat anybody, much less a really, really good club and a team like Oklahoma, when you only get two hits in a single game. And that was the case yesterday. Florida State loses the national championship game 5-1. Still a phenomenal year, though, for Lonnie Alameda and her club. But, man, you sure would have liked to have won one of these down the stretch here to close the deal. But to give Oklahoma credit, you know, backs against the wall, that all that cliche routine. They go WW to close out the Noles. Oklahoma wins the national championship. But really, softly, and I know the Sooners got the belt. And a great year for Florida State in terms of the performance in the postseason. But, man, softball was the big winner here. The television coverage, fantastic.
Oh,
crowds, fantastic. The ladies put it on the line. They were tremendous. It was riveting television. It really was. It was great television. The numbers speak volumes on that standpoint. The standing room only crowds. It was kind of cool to kind of get back into normal with in terms of the sound, the crowd, the excitement, and all that stuff. But the ladies really did put on a great show. So congratulations, Oklahoma, for winning it. And congratulations to Florida State for it, a great, great run.
Yeah, absolutely. G. Juarez was sensational in the circle for Oklahoma in games 2 and 3 of the championship series. And really, Florida State, when they look back at this, is going to look at the first three innings, Pack, of both games 2 and games 3. Because in game 2, they got the Mason home run, couldn't add to it early. And in game 3, you hate to say the Kaylee Mudge leadoff double. When it was left standing in the first, you just feel like that that really sapped the momentum or any energy that Florida State might have been able to gather early, and then Oklahoma was able to take advantage again. And, boy, they got so much power in the lineup for Patty Guzzo's team. So Florida State, a great run. Lonnie Almeida's got nothing, absolutely nothing to be ashamed of. They had a phenomenal, phenomenal season and continue to establish themselves, Mark, and quite frankly, as one of the best softball programs in the country. The good news for the ACC is, and I think I heard Katie George and Maddie Shipman talk about this last night on All-ACC, Florida State has taken other programs with them. Clemson, Duke. We saw that happen this year. Virginia Tech with Keeley Richard. We've seen a lot of programs now follow the Noles, and that's a good thing for the ACC and softball for sure.
Well, we've talked about Florida State as the standard when it comes to ACC softball. Mm-hmm. And even John Rittman said, hey, you know, when we started this program at Clemson, the model was Florida State, how you go about your business. And again, it's you're spot on with that assessment. And Florida State, despite not winning the ACC regular season and did not win the ACC championship when it was played up in Louisville, still, they were the ones last standing, right? They're the ones that got hot when it mattered the most in the NCAA tournament. So I think the future is bright. Obviously, Florida State's program is sensational. They're not going anywhere. And for this league moving forward, there is an excitement level at Clemson, at Duke, at Virginia Tech, and some other institutions that go, hey, you know what? Softball is a real thing. Fans are into it. It's a fast game. It's a quick game. The ladies are great at what they do. So, again, like I said, I thought softball as a whole was the big winner in this tournament in terms of the exposure, the quality of play, the coaching. Everything about it was outstanding. So a tip of the hat to all the ladies and to Oklahoma, their fifth national championship. And if you don't think Florida State's not getting back to Oklahoma City, you're out of your mind. They'll be there before you know it.
Right. I agree with you. I agree with you. Here is Lonnie Almeida after the ball game talking about fan support, her team, and being pretty close to another championship.
I mean, I'm grateful for the fan support, not only for Florida State, for the game of softball. I don't know how many of my college teammates were here this weekend that kept telling me how proud they were of us growing the game and, you know, just being a part. Baseball, softball, I mean, so many athletic players from my days at OU are here, and they just love the growth of softball. And I think that's a big thing that we've always been a part of, is growing this game, not only here but internationally too. It's a great game. So, and I hope all the viewers saw how much passion we have for the game. We're gritty. We love playing, and we play for the bigger picture. And, you know, I hope that they saw that. And, you know, it was two completely different storied teams coming in here. I think it also shows that you can do it different ways when you get to the final championship. And OU got it. They're an awesome team, but we are too. And we fought to the very end.
Spot on. Coach is 100% right.
Yep.
In every sense of the word. I mean, Oklahoma with all the power, Florida State with the speed. That's why I made it for an interesting championship series, because there were two totally different concepts, the way you go about your business. And both of them are great teams and programs. So, again, congratulations to softball. You put on a great, great show.
Pac, we're talking about the growth of a sport, though, now that is starting to sweep here a little bit. The viewership numbers are through the roof. The pace of the game works for television. People obviously in Oklahoma City are going. When you have the Sooners there, it makes a huge impact, obviously, especially late into it. You had a Cinderella move with James Madison. You just get the sense that this might be the next thing, right? You just get the feel for that. I mean, I'm starting to sense growing enthusiasm for the sport. I hear a lot more people talking about it who might not normally mention, hey, you know what, I watched that softball the other night type thing, or I'm, you know, going to a ball game, younger people playing it, whatever the case may be. You just get the sense that it's moving a little bit here.
Well, I will just use my afternoon radio show as a barometer, because we touch base from coast to coast with fans throughout. And I would tell you that there was more conversation this year with women's softball and lacrosse on our radio show than maybe all the years I've been doing it on Sirius XM combined. And that told me something, because, you know, I can throw out a bunch of different topics, but, you know, as far as what triggers, calls, and all that kind of stuff, I always make notes of what's, you know, kind of the trend of where we're going. And women's softball and lacrosse, people were into it. They watched it. They were fascinated by it. And kind of like me and you, to be honest with you, it was one of those kind of things. Maybe the pandemic changed styles of what you're willing to watch or not commit to, but people were into it. The storylines, the quality of play, the athleticism, the excellence. When you sit there and you watch the match, it's fast, it's cool, it's fun. And I also think the personalities of the student athletes. You know, we always talk about football, basketball receiving all this attention. All these Olympic sports, you know, there's great. We talked about this about ACC Network. There's great storylines and stories to be told from the student athletes. I think you saw that with lacrosse and softball this year in particular. But people are talking about it, and they're watching it, which is to me, phenomenal for college sports. You talk about different revenue streams. Where can you generate it up and above the college football playoff, which we'll talk about. This is what we're talking about. People are going to be into other sports up and above football and basketball.
Yeah, so we'll keep an eye on that as we I'll be interested to see kind of some of the final numbers from a television perspective, cumulative and certainly individually yesterday. So congratulations to Oklahoma and to Florida State on just a sensational season representing the ACC. Coming up, we'll talk about baseball. But first, before we get to this early break here, yesterday afternoon, the old college football playoff committee delivered the goods for us, Pac. The working committee has come back with a proposal. I emphasize proposal, Pac, to expand the format from 4 to 12. And we will dive headfirst into this at 8 o'clock. But give me your initial reaction when you heard 12 yesterday. Did you think the Pac-Man plan was, you know, maybe snuck into the meeting room?
Oh, no doubt. I mean, I came up with something back in 2017. I'm not taking, let me emphasize this. I'm taking zero credit here. You just asked me a question. but what I came up with in 2017, there's a lot that was implemented in what we heard this week. A lot. On campus first round games, expansion, open dates. I got into all that 4 years ago and said this is inevitable. And lo and behold, here's where we're going. But the working group, by the way, that really was the think tank behind all this. Jack Swarbrick, Greg Sankey, Bob Bowlesby, Craig Thompson. And how this is going to work is that was the working group. And they did their assignment. Hey, we looked at 63 potential scenarios. Here's the one we kind of feel best about. And that will move on to the management committee, which will hook up next week in Chicago for a couple days. They'll kick things around. That will go to the board of managers, who will eventually get to the conference commissioners. And hopefully by September, October, the ball begins to roll. But I thought Greg Sankey, the commissioner of the SEC, said something that was really, really important. And again, there are certain people in college sports when they talk, I really pay attention to. Greg Sankey and the SEC is one of them. And I thought his quote yesterday was the most important thing I heard yesterday. And that was this, talking about the 12, the number 12. He says, it's not a dictate. It's a fulfillment of an assignment. All right. So and let me emphasize that. This is just a starting point. This is not the ending point. He said, and here's the most important. Right. He said, plus, we have to remember TV hasn't had a say yet. TV always has a big say. I cannot emphasize how important that line was yesterday from Greg Sankey. Because I have told you, if you've ever listened to me on a radio show, nothing gets done until something gets sold. We could come up with the greatest idea in the world, but if nobody's willing to pay for it, it doesn't mean squat. But I sense this one's got some momentum. But we'll talk about it more as the day goes on here.
The first thought I had was that we went really quick from 4 to 12. And it meant that in that room, among those gentlemen who are all bright and really smart,
no doubt,
that they didn't feel 8 was going to be representative enough of the bigger picture. Okay? It also, they kind of skipped a growth plate, if you will. They just went ahead and said, okay, 4 has worked very well. If we're going to look at this, let's look a bigger, wider picture, a more encompassing picture. We're going to take the finger pointing out of it. Here's the other, and I saw some of this last night online from folks who were expressing concerns about 12 and this and that and the other. The one thing this does not do, in my opinion, it does not diminish the regular season, Pac. It doesn't. In fact, I think it creates more for the regular season because now you've got more opportunity to put people in it, right? I mean, you've got more opportunity for a slot, a spot at the table, if you will. The one loss gone deal, the Coastal Carolinas, the scenarios facing Cinderellas like that, UCF, people like that, they now have a real chance to get there. But for that reason, the regular season still keeps its premium, I think. I don't think the regular season gets diminished at all. Are you still going to have to win your conference championship? Yeah, in some cases you are, even if you're not in that first line of teams. I think it's a win. Now, I'll go back and follow you up with this. I totally agree with you. The 12 sounds great. It looks great on paper. They'll figure the bowl thing out. Why? Because they're the turnkey on most of the bowl anyway. Most of the people on this college football playoff management committee are people that are invested in those agreements with those respective bowls in those leagues. They'll figure the bowl thing out. But, Mark, you and I both know that the rights fees for the BCS were somewhere in the neighborhood of right around just less than $200 million a year, right? When we went to the CFP, it was reported those fees were like $475 million a year. If we're going from 4 to 12, the money's got to move, and it's got to move north pretty quick if you're going to add that many more ops to the packaging of the college football playoff, in my opinion.
So I go back to Greg Sankey's comment. TV will have a say, and he's 1,000% right. This is a starting point. They fulfilled their obligation as the working group, and we'll see how this plays out the tail end of next week in Chicago. This will be discussed heavier today on our show. It will be a main attraction, obviously, this afternoon on off-campus on SiriusXM 84. There's a lot of moving parts here, but it is a start, and you knew it was going to be inevitable that the college football playoff was going to expand. If it stays at 12, that's the number. Great. If it gets narrowed down to 8, so be it. But we're not going to stay at 4 because there is too much interest and too much money and too many people wanting a piece of it. And all of that goes back to Econ 101. It's called supply and demand. And that's the way the world works. But I as a college football junkie, I'm excited about it. I'm encouraged. And
absolutely.
I think it's good for everybody. And if you don't like it, hey, here's the cool thing. Don't watch it. But you're going to because you love football. Yep. We're Americans. That's what
we
do.
There we go.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Michael McCann, legal expert. In about 10 minutes, talk a little name, image, and likeness. We got a lot of topics to get into today, including baseball.
All right, we got to go quick here, but we just got a note. John Herman, watching our show, a retired firefighter. John, first of all, thank you for your service to your community as a retired firefighter. John says, Mark, what is that over your right shoulder? I know it's from Notre Dame, but I can't figure it out.
What's right here?
Yes, sir.
That right there is the national champion. Let me emphasize, national champion, Notre Dame fencing mask. Notre Dame fencing mask. That right over the top of my head is the University of Virginia lacrosse national champions. Over here, my left shoulder, ACC champion, Josh Pastner in the infamous face shield. And right there, let me get that right there. Right there. Delivered yesterday.
With the tag on it for street cred.
Street cred, the Boston College women's lacrosse goggles. Right there. Right there. And right there's the shark that hunted me down in Turks and Caicos. So there you go. Something new on this set all the time.
There we go.
Now you know.
All right. John, thank you for the note. Thank you for your service. By the way, John, if you got an extra fire helmet hanging around from your days, I could take that too.
I will. I love the fireman. Let me tell you, I am pro fireman. I am. I love fire stations.
You have also shown that you will wear anything.
I've said that. I told you that day one that we went to television. Any school that sends me stuff, I will showcase. I will wear ACC pride on this television show. That has already been proven. I have no qualms whatsoever. I don't care what it is. Other than that NC State singlet, I'm not going to wear that thing. But I'll showcase it.
I think before we go on hiatus in July, we ought to run clips of all the things you've put on.
I'll do
anyway. All right, here we go. Super regionals. Let's get started with the Wolfpack. Arguably the hardest mission,
no doubt,
of anyone in the super regionals is the one that Elliot Avent has been given.
Yep,
because they have to go to Fayetteville, Arkansas, rowdy Razorback crowd, and the number one seed. Now, I want you to remember something. Mark mentioned this yesterday, and I went back and tried to just make sure I had all my facts lined up here. The last number one seed to win the College World Series was 1999 when Miami. Jim Morris took Miami to the national title. Remember yesterday that Pac said 2 years ago, of course, Arkansas lost the national championship or a chance to win the national championship when they dropped the foul ball.
So okay? All they had to do is catch it.
Paved the way. Right. All they had to do was catch it. They were going to win the national championship.
That's right.
Now, remember the Miami team in 99? They lost 3 years earlier on a Warren Morris walk-off when LSU beat them in the College World Series. Remember that Miami team and this Arkansas team are trying to kind of rewrite the script a little bit. They share that in common, and it's been a while. But Elliott Avent takes a hitting Wolfpack team, and if they get some steady pitching, I think tonight is huge, Pac. I really do. If NC State at 6 o'clock tonight on ESPNU can go into Fayetteville and keep rolling the bats out there and producing runs and keep Arkansas playing behind themselves. I thought Mike Rooney pointed out yesterday, if NC State keeps delivering the goods, if you will, this could get really interesting really fast in Fayetteville.
Well, here's the deal. If you've not watched the Hogs, number one, they are tremendous. They're number one for a reason. Their fans are fantastic. It's a great setting. All of that is pro-Arkansas, right? You can't deny it. Kevin Copps, if you've not seen him pitch, when he comes in out of the bullpen, it's over. I mean, I'm just talking, walk the dog and then go to bed because you're not going to miss anything. NC State's got to make sure that Kevin Copps doesn't come out of the bullpen. And you don't want to see him. You don't want to hear his name. If you're an NC State fan, you want no part of it. They've got to figure out a way to put pressure on Arkansas. I said to Rooney yesterday, you know, Arkansas is the best team. I don't have any doubt that they're the best team in college baseball. But that doesn't mean you're guaranteed to win anything. And we proved it by telling you this century, the number one team has yet to win it all. You've got to put Arkansas in a position where they're playing a little uneasy. Nebraska was able to do that in the regional. They beat them the first night. Had them on the ropes. They're up 2-0 in a Game 7 decider. And you know what? Copps came in and pitched 7 scoreless relief innings. He was unhittable. Yep. Arkansas eventually had a grand slam in the bottom of the 8th to win it. NC State's got to kind of be able to do the same thing Nebraska did. Can you steal the first game and then say, guess what, Arkansas? You got to beat us twice. Can you handle it in front of your fan? You're supposed to win. So that's I'm with you. Tonight is a really important game for NC State to establish that, number one, we're not in awe of the crowd. We're not in awe of playing number one. And we can play with you guys. And guess what? If you can steal the first game, hey, you take your chances on Saturday and, if necessary, Sunday. Tonight is a really, really critical start for NC State. They can't come walking in there bug-eyed and next thing you know, hey, they're playing uphill. Kind of like what Florida State did yesterday with Oklahoma. You can't just fall behind 5-1 with two hits and go, hey, we're in good shape there. No, you got to jump on Arkansas and force Kevin Copps not to enter the game if you're NC State.
Notre Dame, Mississippi State also on tap in Starkville. That starts tomorrow along with Virginia and Dallas Baptist and Columbia. Now for the Irish, the way you played in South Bend is the way you got to play in Starkville. The task is not nearly as difficult as the one that NC State has. But nonetheless, same kind of deal. Got to go on the road. Key game one situation here. Cavadas, Jared Miller, all these veteran guys getting another crack at the NCAA tournament. I told Mike Rooney this yesterday, Pac. I love what Link Jared has done. Can he get them to believe on the road with the stakes this high? I think it's a critical key tomorrow at 2 o'clock.
Well, they've been a great grinder all year. I mean, all they kept doing is winning 2 of 3, 2 of 3, 2 of 3. This is no different. You just want to win 2 of 3, and you punch your ticket to Omaha. I hope they keep the all-green unis back in South Bend, but I hope they bring the bats because they hit 15 home runs in the regional, and they were awesome. Outscored their opposition 50-5. It is certainly a step up in class playing a team like Mississippi State, and it's certainly different being in South Bend versus what they will see and hear. And down there in Stark Vegas, I had a fan call my radio show this week who's a big Mississippi State fan, and they said they're already printing up Catholics versus Cowbells T-shirts. So get ready for that. Catholics versus Cowbells, which I thought was fantastic. But the setting will be great. It's an incredible baseball state. They love it down there, man. Their fans are great. They have a tremendous program. But Notre Dame, in my opinion, has been the most consistent and really, quite frankly, the best team in the ACC this year.
Yep. Devin Ortiz joined us yesterday on the show. You'll see that on a replay coming up here in a few minutes. But Virginia and Dallas Baptist is a circuitous matchup because of the way it's kind of positioned in Columbia. Cavaliers, I think, have got an excellent chance with Andrew Abbott on the mound and the way they're playing, Pack. They've got a flair for the dramatic. And I don't know, did a lot of heavy lifting last weekend for sure in Columbia.
I talked to Dallas Baptist coach Dan Heefner actually the last 2 weeks, again, back on our radio show. They're thrilled to death. This is a, again, if you don't know anything about baseball and you see Dallas Baptist, who are these guys? Let me tell you something. They have a great program. Great program. They're back in the Super Regional for the first time mm-hmm. in 10 years. They can flat out play. They went to Fort Worth. TCU was the team to beat. No problem. This will be a very competitive series. But of the three ACC teams, as it turns out, Virginia doesn't technically have to go on a road trip. They've been in Columbia for a week. And they probably have the easiest of the three when you start talking about NC State's at number one Arkansas and Notre Dame's at number seven Mississippi State. We'll see how this plays out this weekend. But if you're a baseball fanatic, this is an awesome Friday, Saturday, and Sunday coming up.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Packer and Durham. Together again, sort of, kind of. One in Cartersville, Georgia. I'm in Charlotte. Eventually, we're going to get this thing straight and actually do a show together, which we haven't done since March of 2020. It's hard to believe.
It sounds like July 21 and 22. Yeah. It's definitely going to happen.
Well, I would think so, because we're going to talk a little ACC football during the kickoff, and party's on. That's all in person, too, by the way. And we will have you covered from start to finish on the 21st and 22nd of July, talking about ACC football and getting you ready for the season, which I believe is like, 78 days, I think, from kickoff, the start of the actual season.
Don't do that. I don't want to.
Let me tell you, the only reason, I don't keep up with it, but the only reason I know that is I was scrolling through some stupid social media this morning, and there's a picture of Bruce Smith, 78, and it was, I said, 78 days till start of the kickoff. Okay. I was, there you go. So I tied it into a little Virginia Tech ACC action there. There you go.
Nice job.
Thank you.
Let's go to the phone. Michael McCann is well-known throughout the college athletic circles. Legal expert, writes for SI.com, has written for a lot of different people, appears on a lot of shows, and we want to bring him in here. Michael, first of all, thank you for your time. I got to ask this right off the top, but with given your working knowledge here, what was it like to sit in front of Congress on Wednesday and testify and talk about name, image, and likeness?
Yeah, thanks for having me on. It was a great experience in the sense that this issue has been one that I've been working on for years. So to be able to talk to lawmakers directly, it felt great in the sense, you know, just to have the ability to provide input on the topic. But at the same time, I think it also made clear that this is going to be hard for Congress to get done by July 1st before the state's name, image, and likeness statutes go into effect. And it could very well end up becoming a legal dispute in multiple states, depending upon what the NCAA does. And I think it's clear that there are members of Congress that want to see something done before July 1st, but I also think there are others that have other issues that they want to put into a bill, and that could make it hard to get one passed.
Now, with that said, Michael, that the NCAA, who, by the way, knew this was coming for the last couple of years and now pleading for Congress to help, if you're a state that's already passed this law, good to go July 1st, you're going to go about your business, aren't you, if you're a school in one of those states and go, hey, NCAA, if you haven't been smart enough to get to this position to get something straightened out, we have to take the letter of the law and we'll abide by it. Is that right? I mean, it seems pretty simple to me.
It is right, but at the same time, they're in a tough spot because what you just said, they have to follow the state law. On the other hand, they have a contractual obligation to the NCAA as a member, and they have to follow NCAA rules. So no matter what they do, they're going to create a vulnerable position for themselves because they could conceivably be sued by the NCAA. I don't think that will happen. I don't think that's the likely way it gets to court, but their membership obligations, at least as of today. It could change later this month if the NCAA adopts an NIL rule. But if they take no action and everything stays the same, they're either, like you said, they're either going to have to follow state law or break their NCAA obligations. So it's not a good spot for schools to be in, but it's not their fault either.
Michael, let me follow up on that. If I am a school, let's just take Florida State, Miami, and the state of Florida is good to go July 1st. And if they want to go forward, why would they just say, hey, listen, the state law says this, and until the NCAA has a handle on whatever the legislation may be, we'll address that at that point in time. But how can you sue me when you guys don't have a law in place?
Yeah, and I think that's probably the right move. I just think they've also agreed as a member school to follow NCAA rules, and at least currently, as of today, the NCAA rules don't allow what the states are saying is going to be allowed. And this actually played out 30 years ago. After, you remember the UNLV scandal, basketball scandal, Nevada passed a statute saying that there has to be due process and a fair tribunal before somebody's punished, before a coach or player is punished. The NCAA went to court and got injunctions to stop that law from going into effect. And clearly, it's an option for the NCAA based on what we know, what their options are. So that's why I think this could get messy fast.
Michael, when I look at this, the first thing I thought of about name, image, and likeness is, these student athletes have no idea. I mean, I didn't know anything about it until I got into the real world either. All this money, all these things that are going to go into play here, does Congress or the NCAA in your eyes understand these young people are going to get involved in things like taxes and understanding that you're going to then trust an outside service, all those things? I mean, all that seems to be a little unedited, if you will.
Yeah, it is unedited, I think they recognize that's going to be an issue, but I don't think they know how to address it. And I think when we think of name, image, and likeness, often when we see in the media, it's sort of Zion Williamson signing a sneaker deal or Trevor Lawrence, someone of that caliber. There are not that many players like that, as we know, right? So the number of endorsement deals with big brands is probably going to be pretty small relative to the number of players that exist. I think we're more likely to see players doing influencing deals, getting paid on YouTube, things like that, smaller dollar sponsor camps at home. And a lot of them are not going to be in a position where they can hire a lawyer or hire an agent because there's not enough money involved. Right. So that I think, what happens to them? Will there be checks in place? Like you said, the taxes, if you're a lot of deals, if you're an independent contractor, they don't take out taxes initially, right? You have to wait and pay them later on. Would a 19-year-old know that? It's not common knowledge. Similarly, say there's an athlete from another country. What happens if he or she signs some sort of deal? Does that affect their visa to continue playing college sports? There are a lot of complicated issues that should be part of the discussion. And hopefully, if Congress does something, there's some educational quality to it where there's training not only for the students who are playing sports, but also the staff.
Michael, it sounds like the NCAA has put all their eggs into the basket of, hey, Congress, save us and come up with some legislation. Mm-hmm. For argument's sake, if Congress can't make it happen, or it takes so long for them to turn the Titanic around that the states are going to get a multi-year head start here, what is plan B if you're the NCAA?
Yeah, I just want to emphasize that. Let's look at sports betting, right? Congress didn't take action after Supreme Court said the federal. And there's no way that's going to happen now because there are more than 20 states have legalized it. You can't sort of go back in time. And that could happen here if Congress doesn't act, where states are going to start doing their own thing. So plan B, I think, would be the NCAA adopting an NIL rule that has what it calls guardrails, is their word. Restrictions is another word for it. The problem with that approach is that if the NCAA's rule doesn't match what a state allows an athlete to do, there's going to be a discrepancy. and an athlete could go to court saying, look, under Florida law, I can do this. The NCAA says I can't. I'm going with Florida law. Tough spot for the athlete, tough spot for the school, too, in a way. So, yeah, I mean, this doesn't end quietly.
How in the world, I know how we got in this position, because when you're reactionary, sometimes you're always behind. But isn't it unbelievable that the NCAA finds itself in this position on June the 11th?
Yes. Ed O'Bannon's lawsuit was filed 12 years ago. This is not a new issue, right? This is, I mean, it's a dozen years this has been on the radar screen. And it's not surprising that a bunch of states acted quickly, and because they're competing with other states, right? That's how the market works. Mm-hmm. And the NCAA waited, and they were cautious. And the argument is that they give as well, we're an administrative body, and there are different committees, and everyone. I mean, yeah, at some point, that just loses persuasiveness when it's been a dozen years.
Michael, I'm going to ask this question, and I'm not leading the witness, I promise. You've covered this in so many different ways. What are the chances that some of the bigger schools go in and just pull the card from the NCAA and say, that's it? We all talk about moving on, especially the Power Five at some point. Could this issue force that?
I don't think this is going to be the issue that forces it. I think this will get resolved in some form or another, even if it's through the courts. I think the longer trajectory, though, that could be the outcome, because the Power Five conferences could operate on their own. And this came up in the Supreme Court Alston hearing, where the justices, mm-hmm. a couple of them asked, well, you know, why don't the conferences just set rules? Why the conferences are very different, right? The Power Five are different from others. And maybe that's the most sensible approach, that we shouldn't put everyone in the same bucket because the conferences are too different.
Michael, do you think Mark Emmert has a handle on this at all? I mean, I can be as open-ended as you want it to be. Do you think he actually has a handle on the NCAA's position and how to figure this out?
I think he has a handle on the position. I mean, he was clearly prepared for the testimony. I sat next to him. He was the witness sitting next to me. He knew every answer. So I think, I mean, not that that's the test, but in a sense, he was prepared. There was no question that he struggled with in terms of knowledge or anything like that. I think he's in a position where I'm sure he's feeling pressure that, and several of the senators basically said this, you know, why are we here? It's June and these states are starting July 1. This is, you're asking us to save you. And there's truth to that. So that criticism, I think, is one that he has to grapple. I do think he has a handle on the overall issues, but whether he has a handle on what the athlete thinks, that's another question. You know, what about the athletes? What about them in this story? Where are their rights? And I don't know if the NCAA has done as good of a job on that as they should have.
All right. Michael McCann, Sportico's legal expert. Great stuff as always. Thank you for your time. We appreciate it very much. Hope you have a great weekend.
Thank you. Have a great one, too.
Okay. Fascinating, Pack.
Let me tell you June 11th. Michael confirmed everything I thought. That's all I'm going to tell you. I mean, it's. I'm not going to say it's comical because this is a really serious issue.
Yes, it
you
is.
You just cannot put yourself in a position where your back's against the wall, and you know that answer that Michael gave about, hey, this has been on the radar for a dozen years. So what have you been doing? Other than having committee, subcommittee, subcommittee meetings. That's the problem. Again, right. Lack of leadership will get you beat. I say it all the time. If you are weak at the top, you are bound to fail. I've said it for 25 years doing radio shows. It doesn't matter if we're talking about the NCAA, a radio station, a donut store, an insurance company. If your manager stinks, if your management has no sense and feel of how we conduct business and what's coming up next, you'll be out of business eventually. Just the way it works. And Exhibit A is in Indianapolis, Indiana. Just telling you.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham, a Friday edition. Many thanks again to Michael McCann. Very interesting comments regarding name, image, and likeness, but it's a baseball weekend, Mr. Durham.
It is, and Virginia's hero in their first regional action was Devin Ortiz, who ended up starting Tuesday's game on the mound and then hit the walk-off to win it. And we started our visit with him yesterday by saying, okay, were you more nervous for the start of the game because you hadn't pitched very much this year, or at the end of the game when you stepped into the box to ultimately win it?
I would say the beginning for sure, because, I mean, you don't know what's going to happen in the end, especially when you hit that, you know, as a homer, you're not trying to hit one. I mean, I was just trying to hit a line drive, and sometimes, you know, it works out. So definitely just leading up to the start, I wanted to give a quality start. I wanted at least to go 4 to 5 innings. I mean, I know I haven't pitched much throughout the season, so I was just trying to give my best out there. And, you know, with the short bullpen that we had, especially playing the 5 games in the 4 or 5 days, it was, you know, I was just trying to go as far as I can. And so, yeah, I would say pitching was definitely more nerve-wracking.
All right, so you mentioned you've only got a couple innings in the books, right? So you're going back out there to start this ball game. So what are you thinking? Give them the heater, Ricky. I mean, what are you doing? Are you just going to go out there and throw fastball, curveball, and hope it works out? I mean, you got some kind of philosophy going. What are you thinking about when you're going to get this start Tuesday?
Oh, man. So, like, at first I was thinking, you know, give them the heater. I wanted to just, you know, throw a lot of fastballs, but as I started warming up, I realized how tired I was getting just because I haven't built any stamina throughout the season. So I really realized later that I had to start working in some off-speed pitches and mix and matching a little bit.
Devin, not only – I think what gets lost, too, is that, all right, they're going to – Virginia says, all right, Devin, you're our guy. Let's go. But you're also coming off a win against Old Dominion, and with your pitching staff – strikes out 24 guys, which I'm a baseball nut. I can't remember another game where I've seen a team strike out 24 times, and you're taking on an Old Dominion club that can flat out play. So you know they're ticked off. They've had to hear about it. You get the rain delay, a delay of the game. Now you're going on the mound. You're thinking, hey, man, I'm just trying to get this thing between the ditches here. Let's get some moving down the road. And you know you're taking on a good club who struck out at everything they looked at. So I think mentally you had to kind of go over some hurdles, didn't you, in terms of, hey, let me just get this thing moving forward and hopefully we can just hang in there.
Yeah, Brandon Meek and Griff McGarry, oh, man, they pounded the zone on Monday night. Sunday night. And, you know, I mean, it was an incredible performance by them. And going into that, I thought, you know, Old Dominion's going to be hungry to come out and swing the bats even more now because of the game before. So that even adds on some more pressure because now I'm thinking they're going to really want to, you know, smack me around, you know? So I was just, you know, really happy with what happened and just can be more thankful.
All right. You guys have stayed in Columbia, right? The election to stay in town, to get to the super regional at this neutral site. Some would say there's some pros and cons to that. Give me the positives. We're not going to get into the negatives. Give me the positives of staying in one site to spend this week to get ready for the super against DBU.
Yeah, I would say the first thing is, you know, we don't have to travel right now. We can just kind of stay put. Obviously, we're still in the hotel rooms. And another positive, we've played 5 games on this field already. So it's, you know, it's not really foreign to us right now. And, you know, all of our pitchers know how the mound feels. You know, the position players know how the field plays. And the batters know how the batter's box is. So I think, you know, those are pros in our case that, you know, we've played at this field. We know the vibe that this field has, and we're looking forward to Saturday.
Well, you know, there's nothing better than going from Columbia to Omaha. And I know you guys are probably thinking about that. And 2015, again, the national championship run for the Hoos. And again, this is why you guys play hard, man, to be in a position to play this weekend for the opportunity to be in Omaha next week. And I know you don't want to drift a little bit in terms of thinking down the road, because Dallas Baptist is a really, really good program. Mm. But, man, it's got a cool feeling given the way this team got started this year, really behind the gates. And just we kept waiting for you guys to get cranked up. And now that you have, watch out. I think you guys are dangerous.
Yeah. You look at where we were at the beginning of the season, and a lot of people look at this team and say this team has no shot to be in the position where we're at. Or if you, have a conversation with one another, someone's probably going to say, oh, you think this team will be in a super regional in June? And a lot of people would say no, but that's something that we never doubted, no matter the position that we were in. So the fact that, we turned the season around when we had to, it's not how you start, it's how you finish. And we're extremely proud about that.
All right, Devin, we had Coach O'Connor on here last week, and we're talking about the start and then the turning point and now the run on the backside of that clearly is still in progress. In your mind, was it a series of things, or was there one in particular detail of this season that you felt like the switch just got flipped?
Yeah, so I'm pretty sure maybe Coach O'Connor's mentioned this already. We had a team meeting after our first loss on Friday against Georgia Tech. And it was, some serious stuff, some serious, things were being said in there. And it was basically just the reality of our season. Obviously, before the season started, a lot of guys wanted, we all stepped up, and we all had talks as teams together. And everyone's goal was to, make it to Omaha and win a national championship. But as that season started, we were 4-12 in the ACC. So when we had that talk at Georgia Tech, it was basically of what we needed to do to have that plan, have that dream for us come true. So a lot of guys bought into that. I wouldn't say the flip switched immediately. It was something that we had to gradually do throughout, the rest of our games. And, it wasn't, like I said, an immediate switch. It came as the season progressed. We were scratching and clawing for wins, and our backs were against the wall the whole season. So losing the first game here in Columbia, we knew one game away, we were going to, if we lost one more game, our season was done. So something that, kind of we were playing like that the whole season,
Star of the show on Tuesday, start and finish. And the Hoos begin tomorrow against Dallas Baptist. Should be a tremendous super regional weekend, not only for the ACC, but around the country. If you love college baseball, this is an awesome weekend, and it starts today. It's going to be tremendous.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.